Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I would really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular show. This is one powerful way that we together can make a positive influence on the world. Now, Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and creating a greater health happiness for you and your family. Now, we'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and in some cases, fun for you and your family. Now, before we get to our guest, I just want to thank all of you who have taken your precious time to listen to this show, and especially those who are sending in questions and comments and your suggestions. And please know that we appreciate them. The suggestions are one of the things that have helped us make changes in the show that we think has made it better. Now, our topic today is also the title of our guest online course, which is Shiny Happy Couples, How to Detoxify Your Relationship Using the Mel Fox Method. Now, by any standard, the extent of failed and failing relationships has been at epidemic proportions for quite some time now. Now, this is easily demonstrated by the track record of the huge group of people who took a solemn vow to stay together forever. Even with all of the initial dedication, devotion, and pressure to remain intact, around 50% of all marriages end in divorce, with the rate rising at least 10% with each subsequent marriage. Now, our guests are Joe Mellon and Merrill Fox. Joe is a certified marriage educator, lecturer, and author of Curiosity Killed the Spat. Joe says in previous lives, he's been an industrial engineer, a controller, a mail order clerk, and systems manager. And in future lives, Joe hopes to explore video production and perhaps run a pizza joint with karaoke. Now, I'll bet there's a story there. When he's not reconciling bank accounts or writing about reconciling relationships, Joe can be seen playing with his three children, watching Jeopardy, or playing team trivia with Merrill. Now, obviously a huge baseball fan, he is still in mourning from Albert Pujols' decision to leave the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, Joe, we got to talk, but I'm here in Southern California, and I'm where Albert came. So Merrill is the other half of the resentment dumpsters and was an integral part of developing the Mel Fox method. Merrill brings some serious life skills to the table as a former radio DJ, Philly girl, and soccer mom supreme. Merrill now focuses her spare time and energy on spreading the word about the joys of and validity of resentment-free relationships. Merrill, Joe, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
You're very welcome. We may have to come back to those other two points. Joe, we may have to talk about that. But in regards to your course, and I had a chance to, you know, to look at some of the things you guys are doing, and I think in this day and age, I mean, it's just right on target. So, how did you come up with the Mel Fox method? I mean, what was something that told you that this is the time in which you need to put something out there for everybody?
Well, it started out like anything else. You know, it's like, you know, you get into a number of failed relationships, you start asking the questions, you know, like, what's really going on here? And after one that involved my children. You know, next thing I know, I'm in a one bedroom apartment somewhere, and I had time to think. I go, you know, what's going on here? Why did this happen? Why does it always happen? And I wanted to take the approach of, you know, not including guilt and not including blame, and really figuring out what's going on, you know, when relationships fail. And I took the time and I answered the question for myself. In fact, it's just the first two sections of the Mailbox Method is what I came up with. And then I met Merrill, and I tried that out. You know, it really wasn't a method. It was just an approach, you know, to resolving mm-hmm. conflict. And she, when I did that with Merrill, we discovered that there was missing pieces. So the other three parts of the five-part program came, after we got together and we talked and we developed it. And every time that it worked, you know, we'd look at each other and say, we gotta share this with people. You know, we gotta write this down and help other people, because this is the missing thing. You know, this is the, we have the answers, and it works every time. And I'm not talking about little issues here. These are issues that would have, you know, just choke a horse. They would have ended any other relationship. And we come out shining on the other end. And every time that happens, it's like, whoa. Well, it's amazing. So
now, I mean, why don't they offer something like this in mediation? I mean, you know, here, you know, we have, you know, most of our courts have now, you know, made it mandatory that people go to mediation first before they go through a divorce. And again, right now, we're only talking about this one portion of relationship. I know that your course goes into relationships, you know, with our children, with a lot of different things. But just taking the divorce part of it, you know, if you have something that's working so well, why do we have a system that's spending billions of dollars doing mediation that in many cases doesn't work? Because if it did work, we wouldn't have a 50% or more divorce rate.
Alan, we would like nothing better than to see the Mailbox Method be a mandatory part of mediation, because as Joe already said, we know that it works, and it would be, that's why we're here talking to you today. That's why we have a course. That's why we wrote a book. That's why we want to shout this message from the rooftops, because we really believe that given these tools and given the opportunity to use them in a mediation situation, it could change so many things that affect our children, our families, our world in general. And that is an excellent question, and it excites me at the possibility of getting to that point someday when we're able to get this message out, and like we're trying to do right now with you today.
Well, I know that there are some politicians who I know that have commented that they listen to the show. So if you're listening now, somebody put together a bill. Let's start with California. California leads the way in many, many great things and a few not so great things. But we lead the way. So let's put together a bill out there that makes it mandatory. Let's think about the win-win situation with something like this, where we can reduce the costs, which I know government's very focused on. But on the other side of this, and the more important side, we can increase the love, we can increase the positiveness of relationships, and that's going to affect every part of our life. So and for those of you, if you're not a politician, if you know one, or just put the word out there, just tell them, you want my vote? Here's what you got to do. You got to start looking out for the people. And to do that, this is one way you can do it. So now as I've
Absolutely.
So now as I've
Absolutely. And we're available for facilitating that anytime.
There you go. And, yeah. And in fact, so, and, you know, for those people that want to go to the website, the website is theresentmentdumpers.com. If you go to the website, you'll be able to see. Now, is that the best website to see the Mailbox Method?
Yeah, that will link you to everything that we have available, including the book that you mentioned earlier. And we also have a course online that is very user-friendly, and it takes a lot of very significant information and breaks it down into very simple bite-sized pieces. It's very entertaining and can really, if you sit down with your partner or whoever you're interested in learning this information with, this will really get you on the road to being able to incorporate this method into your life and really change your world personally and in so many ways. But yeah, that's the best place, and you can contact us directly through there as well. And we'll be happy to talk with you about our experience and the method.
So let me ask you this. So what is the true enemy of relationships? I mean, we've seen it change so much over the years. And some will say, well, it's the negativity of the media, or, you know, it's the, you know, the greed that's come in, or the selfishness, or whatever. What do you say the true enemy of relationships is, and how do we fix it?
Well, it's a great question. And, the approach that I took was, okay, if it's not going to be, you're not going to blame the other person. You're not going to feel guilty or whatever. There's something else that's going on. And the breakthrough that I had was when I visualized our relationships as a separate entity and kind of looked at it as, you know, it's not just you and your partner in the room talking. It's actually this third entity, this, you know, your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And figuring out what shape is that in. You know, is it dirty? Is it neglected? You know, what does it look like? Hmm. And I kind of boil it down to one term, and that's resentment. It's a resentment that you feel from unresolved issues that you have with your partner. So it's anything that your partner does that you don't like, or anything that you do that your partner doesn't like. You know, both of those result in this thing called resentment. Now, we call it different terms, you know, bitterment, you know, those kind of things. But what it boils down to that is that we have this, our relationship just needs to be, you know, cleansed, detoxified. You know, it's like a kitchen that mm-hmm. you go in there and you cook with your partner and you never clean up, you know, the place is going to get filthy after a while. And you're not going to spend any, you know, you're not going to want to spend any time there. But that's once you learn that you have to clean it and you know how to clean it, then it stays clean and you don't mind being in there.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so...
let me give you an example. I'm going to use an analogy of how you can determine that your relationship is filled with resentment. And we like to use this because it's a very, it's a powerful way that I think people can really understand. When you first start in a relationship, you're in that honeymoon phase.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing coming between you and your partner. You're like magnet and steel, right? You're close together. You can't separate each other. So imagine, and that's when you think you're in that fairy tale stage and everything's happily ever after. And then things start happening and people start to interact with each other and things come up that you don't like and they say something or do something that you don't like. So each piece of paper, imagine each piece of paper being some type of resentment that goes unresolved. And those papers start to build up between the magnet and steel. What happens? The attraction gets dulled. You're not as close as you used to be. You want to force that attraction. You want to go, you know, do the things and feel the way you used to feel, but you can't until you remove those papers. Those papers represent all of those issues that were left unresolved, that get thrown under the rug, for lack of a better term. We can all relate to that. It's uncomfortable. I don't want to talk about it. We'll just forget about that. You know what? I'll just get over it. And as these things build up, the relationship gets weaker, the attraction gets weaker, and respect gets weaker, trust gets weaker, and that's when the deterioration begins. And this is what our message is. That's why we're here today, because this affects not only our interpersonal relationships, but everyone else involved in them, the family, the children. And this is our mission, is to have people understand that there is a way to get rid of those papers, mm-hmm. to actually get rid of them. Don't put them somewhere where you can't see them, but resolve them, reconcile your differences. And with that, those papers go away and you're back to that closeness and that magnet and steel attraction that you had in the beginning. And that's really the best, most significant way to describe what we're trying to accomplish here.
Okay, well, one thought comes to mind, which is timing. So now that we've established that a relationship's true enemy is resentment, and we've discussed a little bit about its causes, how do we reveal those causes of resentment without making things worse?
Well, yeah, we mentioned the causes of resentment, and we actually have four different kinds. We have, and it's all based on miscommunication. We have lack of information. Somebody just doesn't share something with you. Like, you know, if you're mad at your partner for not taking out the garbage, maybe they didn't hear you ask to take out the garbage, you know, so it's a lack of information. The second one is misunderstanding. Somebody said 5:15, the other person heard 5:40 or 5:50. So it's like, it's just a misunderstanding. Then there's false assumptions. Of course, somebody assumed something that wasn't necessarily true. And the last one would be like jumping to false conclusions, where, you know, like somebody says something, you immediately, you know, go somewhere in a defensive position. And so those are the basic reasons. And how you get rid of them is you share information to find out what those that miscommunication is. And the way the analogy I like to use is, when you reconcile a bank account, which I do every day, you know, there's those same kinds of miscommunications that come up, you know, like lack of information. Maybe an AP clerk didn't tell, you know, somebody, or didn't record an online transaction. That's a lack of information. That's going to cause the bank account to not agree with, you know, your accounting software, you know, so there is an issue that needs to be resolved. And the same thing with misunderstandings. You know, let's say you transposed a couple numbers, so the deposit is not the same as what the bank has. Or you assumed a wrong service charge. You know, there's false assumption. So if we actually look at resolving these issues, just like we resolve the issues to reconcile bank accounts, we're on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, it's not that simple when it involves, you know, humans. You know, these types of misunderstandings are not quite as obvious, I guess, as, you know, a online payment that was missed or whatever. But it's nevertheless, it's the same type of thing that needs to be done. But there's something that's unique when we try to resolve conflict, which we'll get in later. But at this point, this is what I had. This mm-hmm. is what I had when I shared it with Merrill. And once we find, you know, but once we got into it, we discovered that there was a third part. There was a second part that needs to be included along with information.
You know, and I can see. I mean, I think in many cases it makes perfect sense to say, you know, I'm sorry. I think you misunderstood, or you know, I'm sorry. Did I miscommunicate? I think those are great ways to, you know, to try to resolve something. But sometimes it tends to make things worse if you have somebody that's escalated and you go, wait, you've come to a false conclusion. From a timing standpoint, how do you decide this is the time to do that? Because there's certain times that saying one, I think, is going to take you forward, the other one might take you backwards. So how do you make those decisions?
Well, it's really understanding what's really going on. And when I tried this with Merrill, we had an issue very early on. And in fact, I thought it was a deal breaker. I thought I was just going to be giving her a call saying, listen, it's not working out. But I had come up with this. So I thought, well, instead of just ending it, let me give this a shot. So I asked Merrill if she would just give me one half hour you know, to speak my mind. And of course I said things the way I thought they need to be said. You know, I used I statements. I wasn't accusatory. I just let her know my world. And we actually got through it. She didn't hang up like I thought she was, but we got through the half hour and we actually got through it. And we stayed together. And a little bit later, what was it, a couple of days, she sends me a, I remember it was on, Y Messenger. And she sent me this note that I'll never forget. She said, listen, I know this dumping of resentment is needed and all that, but does it have to hurt the other person? And that just really threw me because something I really didn't think about. I didn't think I hurt her at all. You know, I didn't, the words that I said were, you know, not accusatory. They were just I statements. I feel this when you do this, I feel this, yet it still hurt her. And anyway, that one statement got us going and we developed this thing we call egoity, which is nothing more than our normal and natural reaction to information that we find threatening to a belief we have or an assumption that we have about the other person. And once you really understand what egoity is, then you can proceed to go through these items, you know, as long as you respect, you know, that your partner is going to be hurt and you're going to be hurt by what they have to say. But as long as you understand what's really going on and understand that it's simply a warning, it's your autonomic system saying, hey, something has just been shared that is threatening something, just like, you know, if you were to put your hand on a hot stove, or if somebody taps you on your shoulder when you don't expect it, you know, you have that little startlement, at least startlement. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to egoity, it's like you have startlement, and as long as you see that as a threat, you're going to get egotized.
And there's different ways that people react to egoity. So this is a really important part because everyone's a little bit different in terms of we've boiled it down into three different manifestations, and they're represented by animals. So again, we're trying to make this as easy to understand as we can. So the first manifestation of egoity is the lion. This is the person that when that belief gets threatened, the first thing they do is they're going to roar. They're going to get loud. They're going to get aggressive. They're going to get in your face and lots of eye contact. And we all know that feeling. We've probably interacted with someone in, you know, I know I have that manifests the lion, and it can be very intimidating and it can shut down the communication. And as Joe said, the key here is understanding what's going on. Their belief has been threatened. They've been startled. They are reacting in their egoity mode. The other manifestation, the second one, is the turtle. This is the person who shields themselves. This is the person who reacts to that startlement by going inside their shell, by becoming passive aggressive, by having wary looks in their eyes, and just are very self-protective. They just basically are shielding themselves until the threat goes away. And then the third manifestation is the deer. And we probably have all related to this. This is someone who just will not participate. They run. Mm-hmm. Their belief gets threatened. Conflict comes in. They're gone. They don't want, they're conflict avoidant. They do not want to talk about it. They're the ones that have that rug that I talked about earlier that's just full of stuff. That rug has got stuff from who knows how long ago all piled up under there because they don't want to talk about it. And all three of these can come and go. People typically have their style when they react to in an egotized state, but you can come and go. I've myself have experienced pretty much all three of those at one time, or you know, within one conflict. But again, once you understand what's going on and you realize, oh wait, okay, this person's not my enemy. This person is my partner. They're not yelling at me. They're upset. They're acting like a lion because their belief has been threatened. Then you can kind of get things back under control and continue to work on the conflict.
Well, I mean, I think you're right on target. And I think I've probably done all of the above at one time or another. But I think sometimes, I mean, aren't we doing one or another to avoid? So for instance, to avoid the roar, we go into the shell, you know, because maybe we're afraid of the roar. Maybe we saw our parents and the way in which they roared was scary. And it created what we saw as kids, we saw that turn into divorce. So if we see divorce, divorce tied to parents' roar, okay, so now does that then make the child that either pulls into their shell or runs away? And how do we get them more comfortable with communicating enough to where they don't need to do any one of the three?
Well, the thing to keep in mind is that just because somebody roars doesn't mean that, you know, they're doing something wrong or it's to be avoided. I mean, ideally, when we get into the fourth part, which is called interaction, both partners ideally will know about what egoity is and expect it to happen. In fact, if egoity doesn't happen, that means you're not talking about anything that has conflict in it. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, okay, well, when egoity happens, you know, you just ask yourself right at that point, you know, either you find yourself getting loud or you see your partner, you know, crossing their arms or something like that, you ask a very simple question. And that is, what belief has just been threatened? And that immediately takes you out of that egoic state because you're focusing on, okay, why did I get upset there? Mm-hmm. You know, here I am with the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with, and I'm getting loud and everything. And immediately we say, what belief has just been threatened? Then you can just go back at that instant. What is it that the other person just said that upsets you? Now you're on the right track of figuring out where the difference is, where the miscommunication is. Because they said it, you got upset, so there is the conflict. So right there, you know, you're getting everything that you need in order to resolve the conflict right there. And you talk about it, and then one or both people at the same time realize what happened. Either there was a lack of information, there was a false assumption, there was something. And then you have this aha moment. Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought you did this, or I thought you said this. You know, if I'd only known this, that's when the conflict or that particular issue is resolved.
And it also really helps to go back to what Joe had mentioned previously about visualizing your relationship as a separate entity. And there's another really good analogy here, which mm-hmm. is, and I have struggled with this, but it's very, very effective to make a concerted effort when you have conflict and you're working through and you're in an interaction to keep reminding yourself that the relationship is on the other side. Picture a tennis court. You're with your partner on one side. You guys are partners. You're not battling each other on a tennis court. You're together on one side. The relationship issue is on the other. So it's very, very effective to, when you're in a state of egoity, and like Joe said, where you can start asking yourself, you know, this is the person I'm chosen to spend my life with or whatever, but I'm battling them. I'm on a field battling. No, I'm not battling them. We're on the same side. We have an issue on the other side, and that really can help get your belief, that question answered, what belief is being threatened, and then pull yourself back to where you realize that it's the two of you against the issue, not each other.
I like
that.
Exactly.
That's the thing you got to keep in mind, is that you're battling the issue, not your partner.
And that is not a comfortable, normal state for a lot of people that is not traditional relationship logic. We fight each other. Look at our, our mentality about so many things of, battling and fighting and everything. It's all, and conflict, it's always, one against the other. But in order for this method to be effective, which it is tremendously effective when executed properly, you have to be on the same side, and you have to constantly be reminding yourself. And it does take work, and it does take effort, especially for people that are not used to that mindset. They're used to that coming out, swinging, fighting each other, you're the enemy, you're the problem, you're guilty of this, I'm blaming you for that. We don't use any of that logic or any of that, those, even that language, when practicing the Mel Fox method. And it takes effort. I'm not underestimating how we really do have to kind of talk ourselves through it, and that it's almost like a default position that you go to where you're battling the enemy. But it can be done, and the effects of it being done are just dramatic and potentially just life-changing.
Yeah, while you're saying that, it was reminding me of a couple that I know that I love and respect very much, but their words were, remember, it's you and me against the world. And they would say that constantly, so that no matter what was going on, they'd go, wait, remember, it's you and me against the world. And that seemed to take them into a different mindset, and I always respected that.
That's perfect, Alan. I mean, that is Mel Fox mindset right there. And we do use mantras and things that can bring you back into that mentality when you start feeling that, that out of control, I'm going to fight my partner feeling, and things like, I'll be on your side always, or you and me against the world. I love that. Mm-hmm. I would adopt that today. And those are very effective reminders of what you're doing and how you can resolve your conflict.
We're talking with Joe Mellon and Merrill Fox. We are talking about how to detoxify your relationship using the Mel Fox method. Again, if you want to follow along, you can go to the resentmentdumpers.com. If you're driving, don't try this. Just go to answersforthefamily.com. We will have all this information for you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have a listener question that's coming in where one party of the wants a divorce and the other party is contesting it, believing that that's not the answer. So we will talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking about relationships. We're talking about how to detoxify yours, if it's needed, using the Mel Fox method. So we have a listener question that came in, and this one reads, my friend's wife just announced she was leaving the marriage, stating irreconcilable differences. My friend, he is contesting the divorce because he doesn't believe that this is the actual reason. They have two small children, and he is pushing for more counseling rather than a divorce. After reading your summary in Alan's press release, I was wondering if there is a point of, quote, too late, or would the Mel Fox method be something I might point them to? Should I buy the book for him, her, or both of them as a starter get? thanks so much for what you're doing. And this is from Simone in, looks like Milwaukee.
Well, we have laws of resentment, and I believe it's the third one that states that, you know, any conflict can be resolved to the point of acceptance by both partners. Now, the key word there, of course, is can. And we recognize the fact that we've been in relationships where there was nothing that can be done that would, you know, that would make you want to spend another minute with this person or whatever, or try to resolve anything. It's like, you know, it's what we call deal breakers. And we understand that that can happen. What we want to do, though, is get the Melfox method in front of people before it gets to that stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because one person, in this case or whatever, they can really, you know, really try to get them to open up and try to see the possibilities that it is nothing more than miscommunication, that, you know, they can dig into these past issues or whatever and clean them out. And next thing you know, you're right back to where you were when you're on your honeymoon, which is what Marilyn and I have experienced a number of times. But I do recognize the fact that, you know, there are times when you have just done enough and the toxicity is so thick that the best thing to do is just to get out of it.
Now, with that being said, in this particular case, we don't know any of the details. So I would say that if the person who filed for the divorce is willing to, you know, he mentioned counseling, if they're willing to go work at any level on resolving issues, removing past resentment, then absolutely that can be done. Unless there was, you know, no willingness to work on it, no willing to reconcile. I mean, it's ironic, and we've noted many times that, you know, the main reason that people file for divorce from a legal perspective is irreconcilable differences. And you don't really know without trying if those differences really are irreconcilable in our world, because that's exactly the term that we use, reconciling. And that's why we use the bank reconciliation analogy, because that's exactly what it is. It's coming to terms with the differences. Where did this go wrong? Why do you feel this way? Why did this happen? Why? And if in this case, you know, we are here, I would say for the listener who would like more information, reach out to us from our website and we'll be happy to talk to you more about, you know, the types of things that may still be possible. It really depends on the two parties and if they're willing to work on it.
Well, and I think you brought up a great point in regards to, you know, what is the actual reason. And I caught that in what they wrote. And Simone, thank you so much for writing this and sending it in. Now, where they say that they're not sure that they believe that that's the actual reason. So I think the first point should be communication. You need to find out what the actual reason is. And to answer your question, Simone, I think it would be best to give both of them the book. And because trying to give it to one and then having them try to explain it to the other may be more difficult. And sometimes especially if you're a friend of both people, to give both of them the book and say, you know what, I love you very much and I want you guys to be happy. And here's something that might help. Why don't you both read this? I think that's what I would suggest. And that also, I think, keeps you out of sometimes some difficult situations where it looks like you're taking one side or the other.
Right. And then also keep in mind that if somebody's not into, you know, reading too much, you know, there's this online course. It's about 4 hours. And maybe it's a little bit more palatable than the book, but there's also that as well.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's kind of what I meant when in regards to the book. And I think of the course as sort of like an extension of it, if you can give both of them. But I was just saying, provide something for both of them and then let them take that step. Let me see how we're doing. Yeah. Time. Okay, we have another question. And this one says, I am very excited to read Curiosity Killed the Spat. I'm in my 60s. My husband and I have always gotten along pretty well, but I feel a deep restlessness happening within him, similar to what some people might call a midlife crisis. He just bought a new sports car. He joined the gym. He's out with his friends a couple nights a week. And I'm starting to feel like he might be preparing to trade me in for a younger, this is parentheses, more exciting model as well. There is nothing I can directly point to, but he is moving into things that don't always include me, and it feels like it's a bit of a distancing, both emotionally and physically. Just wanted your take on this, and this is from June in Long Beach, California.
Well, my first reaction to that is that if that's the case and there is some distance taking place, it's guaranteed to be that those papers are building up between the magnet and steel. There are most likely issues that have not been addressed that are causing resentment, that are causing distance, that are causing that feeling that she can't quite put her finger on, that is feels different than the relationship was when they were close to. So I would, you know, I would recommend really having a discussion with your husband regarding that very topic. Is there something that we need to address? Is there something that has been, you know, put on the back burner or put under the rug that you're not feeling good about? And just trying to identify any kind of source of resentment and at least opening that communication, opening those channels and find out really what is going on. But I know that, you know, that is something that you can detect, and I can just read from her words that she's very concerned about what's going on and what is actually happening between them.
Yeah,
and another thing I want to add to that is that, you know, it sounded like the words she has is like she doesn't know. You know, she may be making false assumptions here that, you know, of what's really going on, but you're not going to know those things unless you have a good sit-down interaction session with her husband to find out, okay, what's really going on? Here are my concerns. You know, is there anything that that we should be talking about? Anything that, you know, is there something that's, you know, all those kinds of things in order to just clear the air, mm-hmm. just to get rid of any false assumptions that she might have. Because, you know, we all have great imaginations when it comes to those kinds of things. And you really don't know what is really going on until you sit down with that person, sit down with your partner, and ask those pointed questions.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking. So, yes, yeah, the idea of the false assumption. And, you know, it might be if she sits down, and again, June, if you sit down with him, and it may be that he's trying to be more younger and exciting for you. You know, maybe it isn't that he wants to trade you in. He wants to do this for you. Maybe he's feeling a little, you know, less attractive or less desired, and he's doing this for you. But you're never going to know until you ask and you communicate about it.
Right. And just the feeling of her, you know, stating that she feels the distance is the red flag that the conversation needs to take place. They need to get it out there, whether it's him, you know, that she's imagining it and he's doing it for her, or there is some kind of unresolved issue. But it starts with perceiving that feeling of distance. And we've all had that experience, and it's very easy to push it aside and just blame it on, oh, we've been together this long, or this is what happens in relationships. I'm here to tell you, it does not happen in relationships unless there's a reason for it. And I think that it's something that she can definitely, it sounds like if she's listening to this show and this subject is catching her attention, then she can definitely get to this before it gets any further along.
Yeah. And
thank you, June.
Yes. And it may be something that, you know, you guys need sort of a coach type of thing, and maybe, you know, going online and checking out the, you know, the online course. If you don't feel the confidence or whatever to ask some of the questions, maybe as you go through the course and the course is directing some of these questions, maybe that's going to help you get through it, because maybe there's questions that he's not sure about either. So yeah, I think there's lots of ways to go. You know, one thought that I have for both of you is, have you thought of the online course as a retreat? And do you think that it's something that would be just as impactful or more impactful if it was something that was done, say, over a weekend, you know, where people, where everybody's together and you're able to look at them, you know, face to face?
We have thought about that, and we've thought about doing, we'd love to have a cruise where we could have a MelFox cruise or a retreat. And also, you mentioned coaching, and that's something that in the very near future that we're going to be available for as well, just working one-on-one, which we've done some of that already, and it's proven to be very, very effective, either as a couple or part of a couple that is interested in learning these skills, being able to implement them. It's been very, very effective to work with us personally, which we are available for. And because it is something, being like a method, it is something that takes practice. It takes a lot of reinforcement, a lot of effort.
Well, yeah, the thing to keep in mind, Alan, is you kind of mentioned it before, you know, it's like there's this hesitation of bringing up certain subjects, you know, and mm-hmm. go back to June, you know, like she sits down with her husband, she's talking about these things. It's very possible that he's going to get upset for one reason or another. And she has to be prepared for that. And that's why, you know, the understanding egoity is the critical issue. That's been the missing piece that, you know, people have been not respecting. And as far as like the weekend retreat or something like that, it's kind of like fight or fight, you know, fighting a fire, you know, like, you know, they have like a fake home that they put on fire or whatever. And they actually go through the steps of facing those things and actually feeling yourself go into those egotized states, but then how to get out of it right away. You know, that's what we're visualizing having, you know, some kind of, if we, you know, when we have like some kind of retreat where we have certain couples show up for a weekend or whatever.
Well, if you decide to do, I love the idea of the cruise. I mean, that would be great. So if you do, count me in, let me know how I can help. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, many of us have been in a situation where months later, something that we thought was history. So let's say we went through, we talked it out, we communicated, we thought that it was history, and it's brought up in a new disagreement. Does this mean that the original disagreement or whatever was not fully resolved?
Exactly. Yeah. The way I try to describe it is like in Boy Scouts, when you get done with a campfire, you actually put your fingers in the coals, make sure they're cold. And that's the way you want to leave an issue. You want it where it's dead, where when you bring it up, you don't have any negative emotions. You laugh about it. You dance on its grave. You know, you joke about it. That's when you know an issue is resolved. Until then, you know, if somebody still is kind of upset or whatever, there needs to be some more talk about it. Because you both have not identified and accepted the resolution.
You know, well, first of all, I just really want to thank you guys for putting this course together and for addressing this. Because as we brought up in the very beginning, I mean, this is at epidemic proportions. And for whatever reason, you know, if it's intensified by the negativity from the media or, you know, or whatever it is that's being brought on, it doesn't matter. We still need to figure out how to get through it. And I love the fact that you're doing that. So I really want to acknowledge you and thank you for that. We're just about out of time, but, you know, we can all see the obvious benefits of having a better relationship. But what are some of the second and third tier benefits of resolving conflict and keeping your relationships detoxified?
Well, the last chapter, outcome, addresses those things. It's not just the relationship with your partner that's improved and salvaged, but it also helps you because a lot of things that are brought up may be limiting beliefs that you may have had your whole life that is suddenly brought to your attention from the interaction with your partner. And, of course, there's also the impact that it has on your family. You know, it's like, you know, kids, like you said earlier, you know, they see mommy and daddy argue. They're not going to want that, and they don't want to be around it. And then it just goes into understanding everything about your world. You can look at conflicts from other people in a totally different light once you understand egoity, for instance. You know.
Well, for everybody out there, first of all, I'd love to have you guys back on. But, you know, go to the website, theresentmentdumpers.com. Again, as I said, if you're driving, go to answersforthefamily.com. We'll have all their information there. And for those of you that love the idea of a retreat, of a cruise, go to their website and tell them that you love that too. And maybe you'll help make that happen. And make sure you tell them that that they should have me there to help MC it, I think. I think that's a good idea. So anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. We love what you're doing, and we appreciate being here.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome. For everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're going to be joined by Jennifer Ann Moses to discuss her new book, The Book of Joshua, The Challenge of Living with Mental Illness. Please visit our archives of past interviews by going to answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube, and it'll be sent to you automatically. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us, spread the word, be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.